This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast as the NBA playoffs continue and we actually move on from that crazy-ass first round where there's just one team after another dropping like flies over the weekend. And now we're on to the second round. We've eliminated half of the teams, and we're going to be talking about all the matchups, all the different scenarios. I am one of your co-hosts, Andrew Reich. I am joined by Adam Murray. Adam, are you excited? We're finally rid of half of them.
Well, that's how it usually works. After the first round, half the teams are eliminated.
Yeah, that's usually how, like, sometimes they just let another team back in. You know,
Spoiler alert. After this round, half the teams will be gone again.
Well, I mean, we'll talk about the postmortem for a lot of the teams that were eliminated as we do our off-season previews or off-season like reviews down the road. But if there was a team that you could switch in one spot, like if you could just hand pick it, which team would you would have rather seen in the move on to the second round? Which one you thought was the most fascinating among the teams that were eliminated?
Really, you know, you could say Milwaukee, but you didn't expect them to go. So far, you know, the way it's been, teams lost pretty much we expected them to lose.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, with the exception of the 4-5 series, where it's just, well, that's not really an upset. They're two evenly matched teams on both sides, so...
Yeah, as a disclaimer, we're doing this on Sunday, you know, on the eve of the Golden State Warriors. Or not the Golden State... Well, it is the Golden State Warriors. They're awaiting their opponent, but we don't know if it's the Clippers or the Jazz. So we're going to give you a double shot here, listeners, and we're going to actually preview both scenarios for you.
Spoiler alert, Golden State easily.
but that's the only one where there might be the upset. I'm pretty sure, looking at the seedings, that there were no upsets, like on paper.
No, there so far there hasn't been, and you know why would there be? Expecting Indiana or Memphis to really do anything? Portland, you know, there. Thanks for, you know, here's your $2 million check for making it.
Portland was a bloodletting. That was hideous. Like, I mean, I don't want to say they gave up, because they played pretty well in Game 1 and Game 3, but, I mean, Game 4 was a thrashing. Like, Golden State scored, like, 47 points in the first quarter, and it was over. Like, they gave up.
Well, you can't give up if you don't have talent, and you're just, you know, you're relying on, your two wings to do stuff, and then your two guards are the exact same player, and you have no front court. So,
yeah, McCollum disappeared in that game 4. You know, McCollum's got a tendency to do that, where if his shot's not falling, his mid-range's not falling, he's just useless, basically.
Yeah, that's, you know, young guns.
But we're going to be going on and talking about the second round. Which one do you prefer, the second round or the conference semifinals as it's portrayed in the... by the NBA elite.
Well, I prefer usually the first round, because that's always the upset fun, and you know, will the 8 seed beat the 1? By the time, it's just, you know, the way the NBA's been over the last 15 years, it's just, all right, who are the Spurs playing this year? And you know me, and trying to watch Spurs game, I do not find them entertaining. And even just, you know, let's look back 10 years ago to Detroit's domination. So it's like, okay, Detroit and San Antonio are in the conference finals again. Well, I'm just going to take 2 weeks off now.
Well, for this one, I mean, it might feel the same way this year, you know, because of Cleveland and Golden State and, you know, some of the usual suspects. But let's talk about two teams that were absolutely not in that running to get to the conference finals. I'm pretty sure that the Washington Wizards didn't even make the playoffs, and the Boston Celtics were eliminated in the first round by Atlanta. Now they're going to be playing each other after Boston had... Let's kind of like talk a little bit about the Chicago series, because that was weird. There was a stretch there for the first two games. I know Isaiah Thomas was, and the whole team was rocked by the death of his sister in a car accident. You know, he had a really good statistical game in Game 1, but you could tell that his head wasn't all the way there.
Well, they weren't there. Chicago was playing, you know, the way they should have all year, as expected. Then all
they
of
had
a sudden,
no answer for Butler. You know.
Yeah, you know, Bobby Portis had a career game, and everybody's like, well, who's this Bobby Portis guy? And we're like, yeah, we've been saying they should play him once in a while, but they never do. And then all of a sudden, we slowly get to broken Fred Hoiberg and the last three games, which were just, you know, disasters for Chicago. And that's like, oh, well, no wonder. Now we can see why Chicago was so dysfunctional all year.
I mean, Fred Hoiberg literally like had a meltdown because when people were asking whether or not Isaiah Thomas carried the ball. Now, granted, Hoiberg probably made too much of a big deal out of it. So if you're going to do that, you're going to have some of those rogue media members that are going to be out to get you and troll you. And
well, of course, that's going to be question number one anytime.
Yeah,
you know, the refs gave it to the call too easy to this guy. Well, how do the refs do this game? And just got a little broken Fred Hoiberg.
And the offense just absolutely died after the Rondo thing. It's so ironic because, like, people in Chicago wanted Rondo out of there at the trade deadline. They were just like, we can't stand around. Now he has those two. Here's the thing, too. If you look at the stats that Rondo had, his, like, actual statistics were okay. You know, they're pretty good for a point guard. But it was just that the offense moved so much better as a team when Rondo was out on the floor with little to no point guard after, you know, with Jerry and Grant and Michael Carter-Williams filling in. They were so bad that Chicago had to go to Isaiah Cannon. And, I mean, that's just feast week for Avery Bradley and Isaiah Thomas and Marcus Smart. I mean, you know what they're going to do. They're going to take you apart.
Well, it's just one of those, you know, maybe Rondo wasn't the problem here. Maybe it is Hoiberg.
You think Hoiberg's out?
We'll talk
about this down the road, but, you know.
The way this team melted down, the way they have underachieved all year with Dwayne Wade and Butler, there's no reason for the team to be this uneven.
Well, I'll say this, though. Butler tried. He had a kind of weird injury at the end of late in game, like in the middle of game six. But Wade didn't help much. He had that one really good game five where he had 26 points, 11 rebounds, and 8 assists. But he was awful in the game six. He didn't really do much that I can recall in the two games in Chicago before that, games three and four. I mean, age is just not on his side. But when it comes to Boston, they move on to the second round after winning in six games against the Bulls. Now they take on the Washington Wizards, who also won in six games. A little bit more convincingly, though, if that's a fair way of putting it, against the Atlanta Hawks.
Yeah, it was evenly matched, I think. And
yeah, it was tied at 2-2 after game four in Atlanta. Atlanta won. Washington won the first two at home, which a lot of people predicted because Washington's a great home team, and then Atlanta won the next two.
And then just the dysfunction came in for Atlanta, and then, you know, Dwight Howard doesn't play the fourth quarter of game six, and then it's just, you know, the glory days of a couple years ago where everybody's a player of the month, those are over.
Well, Millsap played well. I mean, he really didn't have a bad game at all. And
he played well. Schroeder played well, but on defense, he was a liability from most time.
John Wall destroyed him. And you know the one thing? I mean, you don't notice this like because you watch these players day in and day out sometimes, and you don't really like see the difference until you like look at, you know, tape from like a year or 2 years prior, and then you watch him. John Wall has gotten much stronger. Like he can literally back. He would have situations where they would pinch post Schroeder. He'd back him down and just turn around and dunk it. Like, and that, I mean, when your point guard is doing that to your best offensive guard, I mean, that's not good.
Yep, and, you know, we'll get into the Atlanta the offseason, but as expected, you know, the Washington did muscle through, and their much-improved bench of Bogdanovich really...
Yeah, he had a stinker, I believe, in either game five or game four, where he just wasn't really doing much. Bogdanovich, I'm meaning, but you know, and Otto Porter had some kind of small injury issue with his neck in the beginning of the series. Wasn't all the way there. I'm trying to remember some of the other guys. Like Brandon Jennings has kind of found this little niche as like the fourth quarter spark plug. You know, kind of like how Kyle Lowry sometimes used to do with Toronto. At the start of the second quarter, where it seems like at the start of the fourth quarter, they would rest Wall, give him like a deserved rest. They would have Jennings, they would have Jason Smith, and I'm trying to think of another guy that they might bring in off the bench to kind of fill in with him. Bogdanovich is probably one of the other ones. And they actually have given them a lot of life in those fourth quarters, and then you bring back in Wall and Beal, and they're just going to town on people.
Yep, and that's a whole difference between the beginning of the year where they didn't have, you know, a bench or anything, and just it was just Wall was playing 44 minutes and Beal. Hey, you know, he's going to be on a minutes restriction probably for the rest of his career. Nope, we'll play him for 40 minutes because we don't have anybody else.
And who mentioned that Bradley Beal is a great playoff performer in the first round previews? This guy. Right here. I'm pointing at myself.
Okay, good. I mean, good for you. So now
every time I've watched Washington in the playoffs, Beal steps up. Because everyone's looking at, oh, he needs to. His numbers are kind of shady in the regular season. And like, yeah, but watch him in the playoffs. Every time they played in the playoffs, he's played really, really well. You know. Now we actually move on to the actual matchup between Boston and Washington. A little bit of testiness here. We had the issue where Marcus Smart and John Wall got into a tussle. John Wall got ejected. That was very early in the season. Then Wall and Jay Crowder got into a nose-to-nose, I guess you could say, where they were staring each other down at the end of a blowout win by Boston, and Jay Crowder pointed his finger at Wall's nose, and Wall like made a slapping motion at him, trying to hit him. And then there was the funeral game, which is when it's not like they all dressed like they went to. I mean, if that was the funeral, that's the most stylish funeral I've ever seen. Like everybody had like these slick like black shirts and black sweatpants. It was like, I don't know of anybody who would dress like that at an actual funeral when the Washington Wizards all came out in black when they played the Boston Celtics midseason. So a little bit of a small rivalry. Maybe they're just trying to create something that isn't there. But
that's what it was, you know. Boston was like, we don't care, and Washington's like, this means everything for us. And Boston's
well,
like, why?
I was right in the middle of that crazy, crazy home winning streak that got snapped by Cleveland in that awesome game on TNT. But yeah, that was that. The Wizards were kind of like feeling their oats a little bit. Is that how you say it, feeling their oats, or
I sowing
what's,
their
what's
oats?
What's the old cliche? It's like something like feeling their oats, or like, you know, they were cooking. Like they really were feeling a little confident. So. And that was kind of one of the things that helped them surge into the top of the Eastern Conference standings. They didn't obviously get all the way there. You know, the Celtics wound up with the one seed. So the Celtics host to start. Is that, first of all, a big deal for Boston? I mean, they just had two games where they dropped them two in a row in Chicago. Things look super dire. And then they, you know, they go on the road and they win all three of the road games. So they haven't lost a road game in the playoffs yet. The Washington Wizards, even though they don't have home court, they're awesome at home. Like, they're almost impossible to beat at home.
Yeah, and then they just disappeared against Atlanta, where they were, wasn't it, they were down, wasn't it, like 17-5 at the first one of the games, and
yes,
they were constantly down 20.
Game 3, they got blasted. No, at the beginning of game 3, they got blasted against Atlanta.
Yeah, so Boston basically, I don't want to say they salvaged their season by jettisoning Amir Johnson and putting Gerald Green in.
That was unbelievable. Yeah, like, I think he had 15 points or more in two of the games. You know, both.
Yeah, that's what he, you know, then you could see, like, okay, well, that's why you didn't dump him and try to trade, because you needed him, and, you know, he was probably supposed to be what they thought James Young could have been, but you go small, but the problem is how you can't go small against Washington, because Washington is never going to go small.
Well, here's the thing that's funny about it, too, is that I know why Brad Stevens wanted Amir Johnson in there. He was the reliable, like, you know, center type starter. And also the Bulls were one of the best rebounding teams in the league. That was one of the only things they were actually good at all season long. So you wanted a big guy to kind of balance out, you know, Robin Lopez and, you know, some, and they would throw Portis in there, and they would, you know, Jimmy Butler was a good rebounder at the small forward slash shooting guard position, but it didn't really work as well as they thought. And then they started to kind of run a little bit of like point forward stuff with Al Horford, with Isaiah Thomas going off the ball, and that really worked for him. With the Washington Wizards, they do go small a lot. They had that big starting lineup with Markieff Morris and Marcin Gortat, but we talked about the Kelly Oubre thing, where Oubre's defense really helps them when they go small. They're also not a great rebounding team either. They're 23rd in rebounds, they're 24th in blocks. They, you know, their post presence is not exactly stout. You know, we all know that the strength of the Wizards is the backcourt. But the thing is, too, that the one thing that scares me about Boston is that they got a real gift with the Rondo injury, because even though you can play Butler at the two, the backcourt of Chicago, and also Wade, the backcourt of Chicago just could not match what they could give, what the Celtics were able to provide with Isaiah Thomas, Marcus Smart, who you can play at the two sometimes, and Avery Bradley. Now you have to play against Wall and Beal. I mean, this is one of the very few times where the backcourt of the opponent is actually going to be better than Boston's.
Yeah, and that's...
Is that fair to say? Or would you say it's even?
No, it's Beal is better than Avery Bradley, and Wall and Thomas are both, you know, they're both all-stars,
they're different. They're different types.
They're different
of players.
Types of players. Yeah. It just comes down to Celtics can't rebound for anything, so you're going up against a they're not a well-rebounding team, but they're a good offensive rebounding team. They're good on putbacks. They crash the boards a lot. Mm-hmm. Celtics can't box out anybody. They can't rebound for anything, so it's going to be one of those, well, you're going to have to be on fire and shoot, you know, shoot lights out the entire series.
Yeah, they're both really good offenses. You know, Boston likes to take threes, and they shoot well from the three-point line. So does Washington, even though their three-point ranks are a little bit lower or a decent bit lower than Boston's. Defensively, you worry about Washington. You saw that in Atlanta in Game 6. They're, like, destroying them in the first half, and they just their defense just could not hold, especially with Ian Mahimi still being out with the knee. And there's some talk that he's very likely not going to be back for this series either. So when Atlanta would be playing their small lineup and, you know, taking a lot of threes, Washington had trouble holding the lead down. You know, they still won the game, but they definitely had a stretch there where they weren't really – holding it down on their defense couldn't really do anything about it. And Boston's defense, I don't know. Did they prove anything to you against Chicago, or was that just a situation where Chicago's offense just kind of
Chicago
stumbled on
itself? Just melted down. You know, Hoiberg kept Butler in, what was it, game four for too long, and he was spent, and just weird combinations, and let's put people on the floor who don't play together, and, well, okay, Portis had a career game, well, let's just bench him now. Okay, Zipster had a good game, well, let's pull him out. Let's put in, you know, let's put in Michael Carter Williams for 5 minutes. Like, huh? Where did this come from?
So let's look at the matchups here. Now, you got Horford. Horford, I believe, a couple of years ago was playing with Atlanta when they played Washington in the second round, and Horford gave them a lot of trouble. Remember, he had that game when he put back in game, I believe it was 5 in the 2015 Eastern Conference semis. So, you know, Horford has given Washington some problems. He might be able to do something against Gortat and Markieff Morris. So that's kind of – I don't want to call that an even matchup. I'd give that slightly to Boston, especially with how well Horford played in the Chicago series. The one that interests me is if they go with the small versus small, like you're saying, what happens when Otto Porter Jr. is lined up with Jay Crowder, and what happens if Marcus Smart is disposed on John Wall so that they don't have to make Isaiah Thomas work too hard on defense.
Well, then that's the question. See, now you're going super small, because then you're going to put Avery Bradley on Beal. So who's Thomas going to guard?
Exactly. You know, you would have to go, like, you'd have to pray that they go with the Oubre lineup so that you could put Thomas on Oubre, because Oubre's not that good offensively yet.
Yeah, so that gives you no reason not to put in, you know, not to go big and just put Marcus Morris in. And yeah, because Horford is a different player now. He is not the same guy. He is just, he likes to shoot threes, and he likes to stay, you know, he's...
He likes to pass, too.
He's the point forward now. He doesn't want to play down low anymore.
Mm-hmm. But he was very effective against Chicago once they started kind of flexing him around.
Yeah, and that's sort of the, everybody was sort of like, where was he all year? He had a great game. Yeah, but we should have seen him years, you know, from the beginning of the season being this guy. Now we need to be impressed that he turns it on. Where was he before?
Yeah, very even in the other departments, like Jason Smith versus Kelly Olynyk. Now, please don't make fun. Okay, I know what you're thinking. Don't make fun. But like that's the backup, you know, finesse big matchup, you know, one versus the other. You know, that matches up well. Brandon Jennings versus Terry Rozier is actually interesting because they will be stuck with one another. You know, and Rozier have one game in Chicago where he kind of just lit it up all of a sudden in garbage time?
He has become
a dependable backup point guard.
In year two, he has made some progression, whereas, you know, year one was, why did he get drafted? We've redrafted the first round. One player doesn't make it. Who is it? And all of a sudden now it's like, wow, he's a serviceable backup.
Yeah, Oubre Jr. versus Jaylen Brown. Just that's only, like, if you stare at the lineup. If you actually look at the way the rotations go, they might not ever play each other. Exactly,
Jaylen
that's what
Brown
I'm
has been pulled from the lineup, and...
That's what I'm saying. They probably won't match up with one another. The one that's interesting, obviously, is that anytime you're, you know, the Boston Celtics play somebody, your first worry as a Celtics fan is, okay, what about the rim protection? They're not a good rebounding team. How badly can the other team beat them in the post? And Washington does have Gortat and Morris, like we were saying, but I don't know how effective they can really be unless they go a little slower than they usually go, because they play at a pretty quick pace too, and they just try to pound it inside. But that means you're relying a lot on Gortat to get baskets. And if you saw the end of the Atlanta series, Gortat had some really, really bad stretches scoring-wise.
He did. He disappeared for a while. But again, the Celtics just can't rebound, and you're going to have to, you know, put a lot of Olynyk in, and, you know... somebody from the box score is not going to show up is Jonas Derebko. He played really well in Chicago. It's just he's not filling up the stat sheet.
And the thing that's good for Derebko and what makes him work is that you don't have to go small and play him at the four and sacrifice. Like, he can actually play some power forward in a big lineup. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not going to completely expose you, which is what takes people off guard. I'm just so fascinated by the smart wall thing, because I know that's going to happen. Like, I know you're worried about, well, who does Isaiah cover if he's not covering the one? Well, I mean, you can't put him on John Wall. You don't want to get Thomas in foul trouble, and Wall is just too fast.
Like, you just put Isaiah on Wall and just have them go at each other the entire game, and yeah. Both of them will be like Harden, Westbrook, where both of them just score 40.
Yeah, defensive discipline in the backcourt's big too, because the one thing that Gortat is known as, he's like one of the best screen setters on high ball screen. So if he's able to get those screens set for Wall or Beal sometimes kind of comes off of the screens and runs offense too. Wall's, you know, that's why he was getting into a lot of that post position on Dennis Schroeder. The discipline between Bradley, Thomas also, and Smart, that's going to be big. I mean, is there any key guys that I'm missing here that I'm not seeing, you know, on the stats that might come up all of a sudden?
Nope. The rosters get shortened, and that's why it's like, oh, Jaylen Brown. Nope, he is not going to play. Amir Johnson. They might have to put him back in and just go back to their normal big lineup.
Does Washington's experience kind of help them here? I know that was under Randy Whitman. But, I mean, they have been there before. Boston, this was their first playoff series win under Brad Stevens. So, is there a little bit of jitters here? Is that any kind of worry?
No. Washington, it's Boston, it's just, they are perhaps the weakest one seed in recent memory. They are not, you know, what are they at, 53, 54 wins? That's not a team that's like, oh, well, that's a one seed dominant thing.
Mm-hmm.
They have many problems, like we said, size and rebounding being one of them. So it's one of those things you sort of just, well, this is who they are, and let's hope their youthful energy and will carry them through. But like I said, the first, you know, last round, oh, the Celtics will be gone, you know, Wizards in six.
Okay, so you like the Wizards here.
I'm expecting the rebounding to finally... Chicago, after watching the first two games, Chicago could have easily won. It's just, you know, they pull the Chicago.
My problem with Boston now, I picked Boston when we did the overall, when we did our first round previews, when we went through the whole map of it all, and I still said Boston was going to get there to play Cleveland, but I'm slowly starting to change my mind now. I gotta have to make a snap judgment here for podcast episode purposes. So I'll actually go ahead and say Washington. The thing that worries me about Boston is that even though they pulled out that series after, you know, after Chicago couldn't, you know, hang with their guards after the Rondo injury, those losses at home and the vulnerability really scares me. Then the thing about Washington, like I keep going back to, is at home they're really, really hard to beat. Boston would have to play almost not a perfect game, but they would have to play really well, and Washington would have to play terribly in order for the Celtics to win one out in D.C.
Well, that seems to be the thing, is Washington's terrible on the road, and, you know, Boston has the home court advantage, so that's your, you know, the only defense maybe you kind of have for this?
Yeah, I'm going to go seven here, where the home team wins every game, and then Washington takes game seven. That's okay. Where I'll go. I mean, I can easily change my mind about this, but I have to make a decision. I'll just go with Washington here. I don't know which one looks like the better team. Like, if you looked at the first game, two games between Chicago and Boston, you'd be like, wow, the Bulls are better than Boston. And then it kind of worked out after that, like, oh, no, Boston is better, you know?
I wouldn't say they were better. It's just they got lucky with the Rondo injury.
Okay, we're moving on to the other part of the Eastern Conference playoffs, and it's actually a rematch of the Eastern Conference Finals from last year, and that is the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Toronto Raptors. First of all, I'm almost convinced Milwaukee was a better team than Toronto. I know Toronto won the series, you know, and they had a little more bit more depth than Milwaukee, which I guess by proxy makes them a better team. But there was a stretch, there was a good while there where I was like, man, I think Milwaukee's better than Toronto.
No. No, Toronto was the better team. Milwaukee is just so unorthodox. Mm-hmm. You know, again, Thon Maker, okay, you get 7 minutes guard time. All of a sudden, he's playing meaningful minutes and like, oh, wow, he's going to be really good. And, You know, everyone who's on Milwaukee is just like, well, they're not playing anything traditional at all. It's just, You know, Giannis is doing his thing. And then all of a sudden, Giannis crapped out at the end as expected.
Well, they got so desperate for people that knew what they were doing down the stretch that they had to put in Jason Terry. Like, we talked about this with Kidd. He kind of throws out crazy lineups just, like, by the minute. Like, whatever's hot, he goes with it. That's why Jason Terry was in there for Game 6 during that crazy comeback where I think Toronto was up, what, 25? They were, it was like 71-46. And then Milwaukee went on they swung like 27 points, got a 2-point lead. And then DeRozan made a big dunk. Corey Joseph hit a three, and then Milwaukee had sort of a mental breakdown in the last possession where they were down three, and Giannis kind of like screwed up a possession, or they didn't really run a play because they didn't have a timeout, I think it was. So they couldn't call a timeout to run the play, so they took a rebound, I believe, off of a free throw or maybe an inbound under their own basket. Giannis had no idea what the play was, so he just went in for a dunk, and there was only 3 seconds left, and they were down one. The game was over. So, you know, and that's just an experience, you know. Do you think the experience that Toronto's had in previous playoff, in the previous playoff series, helped them out in that situation, kind of bailed them out against Milwaukee?
Well, yeah, that's the thing, as you say, with all young teams, they don't know the pressure, they don't know. And, you know, Toronto, like we said, we've been there, done that, and all of a sudden, this is, you know, now we have the matchup we expected, and I'm just going to not speed things up with you, but this is the one Cleveland was like, okay, good, now we can take it easy again because we own this team.
Okay, so that's kind of the easy way for Cleveland. I know they struggled in the second round against Chicago in 2015. That one went six games, but they just laid waste to the Atlanta Hawks, and that's the same trajectory as this. They had played the Hawks in the conference finals and swept them. Then they played the Hawks again in the second round and swept them even worse. You know, just made a bunch of threes. They beat Toronto in six games last year. So what do you see here in terms of like games or number of games played?
I'd probably say Cleveland in five.
So, I mean, Toronto's got good home court, but I mean, we've known this for Toronto. The moment you think they're going to zig, they zag. Like I was confident going into that Milwaukee-Toronto series that Toronto was the better team and they were going to wipe out Milwaukee. And they probably were the better team, like you said, for Toronto, but they just couldn't they never showed you like the flashes that you thought they could show you.
They just, in the end, they run out the clock horribly for 20 seconds and then it's Lowry or DeRozan taking an off, you know, off kilter 20-foot long two and bounces out. Nobody's rebounding. Nobody's boxing out. And, you know, Ibaka helps, but at the same time, you know, Cleveland didn't have any problem the first round.
Because it's such an easy comparison, give me the differences between the Toronto-Cleveland matchup in 2016 and this one. Like, how different not only is the Raptors, obviously, with the Serge Ibaka deal, but also, how different is Cleveland?
Cleveland is the exact same team. They're just a year older. This is the team Toronto wanted to have last year. Ibaka makes it. I don't think he's the cure-all, and he's sort of just the player. He's the exact same player he was in Toronto, as he was in Orlando, as he was in Oklahoma City. There is no other gear for him. I think he's sort of stuck where he is now.
No, but he's a very good playoff performer.
He's a good playoff performer, yes. The whole Milwaukee series, I was like, I didn't understand why they weren't using Valanciunas at all. he seemed to be a mismatch for a lot of times. It's just, oh, let's just not use him, and it's just Lowry and DeRozan. And
I think that was just kid stupidity kind of working against Casey, where Casey was trying to like counter what kid was doing, and it was like, no, kid doesn't know what he's doing, so don't counter it. Just keep doing what you do, you know.
And you have, you know, PJ Tucker is your defensive second unit guy. You don't have the energy of Terrence Ross, and there's no, you know, Lowry plus lineup now. Yeah. And Norman Powell, as we said, he was good, you know, the same thing last year. Oh, wow, he came out of nowhere. That's a good first round. Then, oh, they're going to rely on him too much, and he's going to just falter this year, this second round.
Yeah, Powell was a guy who just seemed to find the creases in the Milwaukee series, where either they just didn't game plan well against him, or he was just making a shot. No, I think he might have some success against Cleveland, too, because if you look at the guards there, you know, Shumpert, J.R. Smith, Kyle Korver, not defensively stout, even though Shumpert does still have his moments. But let's just break it down. Who guards Irving? Who guards LeBron? Who guards Kevin Love?
It'll have to be Ibaka on Love, and
which is a fair matchup for Toronto. Like, that can actually work if they force Kevin Love to, you know, to stay in the post and not, you know, leak out for threes. And Ibaka's a good closeout guy too.
It's going to have to be PJ Tucker is going to have to get the starting minutes against LeBron, because you can't put DeRozan on him, and Norman Powell's even smaller.
Yeah, but Tucker's a very touchy-feely type of defender. He's a veteran. He's been around, but you can't do that against LeBron. I mean, he's just too smart, you know. And then there's Kyrie Irving, and I guess Kyle Lowry. Is that fair? I mean, Kyle Lowry's a good defensive point guard. Is that it?
Okay? Oh yeah, that's the easiest matchup of all.
You know, then the backup. You know, the backup situation for Cleveland. You know, Darren Williams has played well, so I don't want to say like Corey Joseph is going to come in and just lay waste to Darren Williams.
Yeah, but Darren Williams can only play 15 minutes. He's old and broken down. Yeah, he played well, but you know, when nothing's really expected of you, yeah, you can come in and sort of do your thing. Same thing with, you know, how Richard Jefferson had made it for so long. It's just, okay, you're old, you know, you're just required to let our guys rest.
Yeah, the other thing with Cleveland is that they, you know, the part of the story of the Toronto-Cleveland series from last year was that against Atlanta, they destroyed them from the three-point line. They were just – they, like, set a record at the time for made threes in a game, and they were just killing them from the arc. Toronto had game-planned against that, and they were so obsessed with the three-point line that they just let Cleveland get whatever they wanted in the paint. Like, literally the first time you would get through the first wave of defense, you know, on the perimeter, there was, like, literally no one but the center there. They also played without Valanciunas for a good portion because he was injured. Came in late, but he wasn't effective. So do you see kind of – is there something similar to that, or do you think Toronto's going to have, like, just completely scrap that game plan and do something different? Because Cleveland, you still have to honor that three-pointers because they just – that's what they're best at. That's their bread and butter outside of LeBron being able to get calls.
I think Toronto just has one – we say this every year with Casey, and just – he'll go back to the same plays and just not – he's not an adaptive coach.
No. I mean, the one time he adapted was by accident because Valanciunas got hurt. They put in Biombo, and Biombo gave him, like, a great spark. I don't know if there's anybody in Toronto that could do that. Maybe Powell. Maybe, like, maybe someone totally out of nowhere, like Lucas Nogueira. You know, somebody who can actually block shots. You know?
During the regular season, he had been the guy.
Yeah, we didn't see a lot of them in Toronto, I believe, in the Milwaukee series, you know, which surprised me because Milwaukee had no problem throwing out Thon Maker. You'd think that you wanted to put in, like, a defensive guy to try to, like, match him up, but they were so starving for offense in so many stretches in that series that they just needed their best offensive guys, and that's when you go into the hero ball, which is still true for Toronto because they were dead last in the league in assists, where it's just DeRozan make a play, Lowry make a play, Valanciunas make a play. Like, that's kind of like – that's their offense, you know. Patrick Patterson, still a really effective six man, but I kind of worry about what he can provide against Cleveland in a really tough spot.
Yeah, he's.
If you go small, he's going to have to guard Love because Thompson's going to be out there.
Yeah, and there's also Channing Frye too. So again, this just comes down to Cleveland. You know, has matchup answers for seemingly everybody.
I mean, so you see this actually going less than the six games from last year. You see this going 5 or 4?
Yeah, I see 5.
I mean, yeah, Toronto can definitely win one at home. I mean, I wouldn't hold that against them either. You know, it's just the thing is too, Cleveland beat Indiana in a sweep, but they were very, very close games. Like all four of the games, except for, I know game two was close on paper, but I watched the game. It really wasn't that close. 3 of the 4 came down to the last possession, you know? So does anything worry you about Cleveland?
No, because we say this every year. This is okay. Now they're going to start taking it seriously. And, you know, the same thing with San Antonio. Was it last year? It was okay. They'll turn it up against Oklahoma City. They were just sort of, you know, relaxing and
yeah.
You know, this is their window is extremely small. As much as Cleveland doesn't want to admit it, you know, LeBron, a lot of his age and miles, and just you can't do this 2 years from now.
Mm-hmm. And so you mentioned the San Antonio Spurs from the previous series, or the previous year. So let's go ahead and just move on to the Western Conference. We'll talk about the 2-3 matchup there. Is this kind of like the most anticipated of the four potential second round matchups for you, or is there one that's
by default? I think it's
the Spurs and the Rockets.
There's no excitement with the, you know, the Golden State match. There's really not much excitement here.
Well,
Cleveland.
You know, if you go back to our previews, we probably said the same thing about how it wasn't that interesting for Oklahoma City and the San Antonio Spurs, and it turned out to be like a major, major like series, like in terms of it, you know, just the Western Conference in general. It was Tim Duncan's last series. You know, the Spurs won 67 games, but they couldn't match up with Oklahoma City, and then Oklahoma City used that momentum all the way into the conference finals where they almost took out Golden State. I mean, I can see both teams, San Antonio and Houston, I could see this series propelling them against and feeling really confident against either of them because they're going to be so tested.
Yeah, this is Houston is just a shooting team now. They're just going to they are the antithesis to the slow ball that is San Antonio.
But the thing that makes Houston effective is not only that pick and roll with Harden, which is like a nightmare to guard because you really can't guard it because everybody there's always someone open at the three-point line if you double-team or if you hedge. And then there's Harden who just draws fouls at ad nauseum. But the other thing is that they take so many threes that you're going to give up threes. Like, it's just – it's the way it is. Like, they're going to get, like, 12 to 13 threes probably a game made. And if they have to attempt 40, they'll do it. So do you think San Antonio will allow them to kind of go into that pit with the three-point line where they just let them launch and they just try to keep them at a low percentage?
That they have no other choice to. They're not going to keep them up. They're not going to, you know, run around with them, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, they are a little younger and they have a little bit looser legs than they did last year. You know, no more Duncan there. You got Dwayne Dedman. You know, even some of their other guys like Patty Mills, Kyle Anderson, Jonathan Simmons can go up and down a little bit, but David Bertrand's like they don't really have like the quickest guys. You know, if they have a quick guy on their lineup, it's probably DeJounte Murray, but you're not going to put him in a situation like this.
No, you're not. It's just you think Tony Parker and Ginobili are gonna.
Yeah, nice little trip to the time machine with the time machine by Tony Parker there in the game 6, I think it was, huh? Like 27 points, 11 out of 14.
Yeah, I was surprised how much just sort of Memphis gave him a little more trouble than they should have.
Well, I did say about Memphis when we did the preview, I said, I think the San Antonio's going to win, but they are at full strength, which is super rare for Memphis because they're never at full strength. So for them to be ready to go like that, I kind of had the feeling they could give him a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, but then Tony Allen went down instantly.
Yeah, Tony Allen went down, but that was actually, you know, that might have been one of those things where, you know, it might have been addition by subtraction because they had to throw out their Troy Daniels and James Ennis. James Ennis turned out to be a really good three-point shooter for them in the against the defensive lineups that the Spurs would hit. The problem they had was that they had no answer for Leonard, and the other problem that they had really was that LaMarcus Aldridge when he was engaged, got whatever he wanted inside against Randolph, you know, because, you know, Mark would be matched up a lot with Powell or Deadman or somebody like that. You know, even David Lee would get some minutes, which stunned me. But, the Spurs, it was just kind of a very Spursian series win. You know, it's one of those ones where you definitely remember game four, the overtime game where Conley and Leonard both went off and had incredible games. Memphis won the game, but then the Spurs won the next two. With Houston, you know, they beat Oklahoma City in five, but I felt like it was a closer series than that. I felt like Oklahoma City had some chances. They just couldn't – Russell Westbrook just couldn't get out of his own way. He just felt like he had to do everything on his own when he probably – I mean, was it sort of deserved to feel that way if you were Russell Westbrook to have to try to do everything?
Well, that's what we had mentioned. That's what he does, and he was his own worst enemy in the series.
I know, but – being your own worst enemy is still better than deferring to one of those guys that can't do anything for you. It's kind of like the Michael Jordan 80s problem where he didn't have the talent around him yet, so he just had to do everything by himself.
Yeah, but that's also the coaching problem. You also had all season to get these guys ready to do it, and then, you know, you draft somebody in the lottery who doesn't play.
Yeah.
Oladipo was who he was. And
can't play Kanter.
Nobody, yeah.
I mean, he literally said it on the bench, can't play Kanter, you know?
You know, so it's just, that was just a coaching thing. But now it's just going to be, Houston is just going to be, go run down, shoot as quick as you can. Mm-hmm. Let's not let these guys rest for 24 seconds ever.
What has surprised you the most? Eric Gordon being a dependable playoff scorer or Lou Williams being a reliable playoff scorer?
They both are who we expect them to be.
Yeah, but Lou's got a history of being bad in the playoffs because he doesn't draw the fouls that he usually gets.
Yeah, but when your job is just to shoot threes, Lou also tried to do, you know, in previous playoffs, is like, well, I'm going to try to be a real player. No, just be the spot up three
guy. The ball guy, the three ball guy, you know?
Yeah, don't play out of your comfort zone.
And then you got Patrick Beverley got under Russell Westbrook's skin. Who do they bulldog on, Patrick Beverley on? Like, what's his job?
It'll probably have to be
Mills? Parker?
Yeah.
I mean, here's the problem. The thing with Parker is that he's so slow now. And he's so bad defensively that you got to hide him somewhere. So Parker will probably guard Beverly in that regard. Even though Beverly had some good offensive showings against the Thunder, he would probably be the least lethal offensive player on any lineup that the Rockets throw out there if they go small. But when it comes to defense, it's really interesting. I think Leonard's too big for him. I could see him getting under his skin a little bit, kind of like Marcus Smart if they, you know, with Boston, but I don't see how that would work. I think Leonard would just immediately foul him out.
Yeah.
Then the Spurs have their other defensive, like, bulldogs. You got Danny Green and you got, you know, Simmons if you really get desperate. Then you got 3-point shooters like Bertans, he's just really good at shooting threes. It's like his percentage is high. Lord knows with Ginobili. I mean, he was like a no-show in the Grizzly series. So, I just think there's a lot of interesting matchups because I really don't know where the matchups are going to go. That's what kind of fascinates me. I mean, Harden is the biggest one. I mean, if you're the Spurs, like if you're the Spurs in the film room, you're like literally taking Harden's name, you're writing it big letters, and you're putting a circle around it. Like that's the first one that you have to attack. So what do you do there with Harden? Do you like have Kawhi come in on double teams, or you just do like one on one with Kawhi on Harden?
You can't put Kawhi on Harden.
Why not? He's one of the best. He's one of the best pick and roll defenders there because he's got long arms so he can deflect the passes. Or do you want him to kind of rest, kind of like stay back and do center?
He has to kind of stay back and sort of protect from the
back end.
Yeah, the Ryan Anderson, Eric Gordon shooting there. You can't just have him run with Harden the whole time.
So you like Leonard on the closeouts rather than just the straight like pick and roll defense where he might get picked apart by Harden because the best option will be one pass away rather than Harden just going to the hole.
Yep.
I mean, here's the problem, though. Harden going to the hole is still their best offensive option, even though some other guys are open, because he's so good at, you know, just drawing fouls and Euro stepping and all that. And I can understand the idea that you want to stop that first. You want to cut the head off the snake, you know, so people would think, oh, just put Leonard on Harden, we'll be fine. Well, it doesn't really work that easily, like you're saying.
Yeah, and I don't know. I might have to flip-flop on my original theory. I might have to go with Houston on this one.
You like Houston here? Is it now the Spurs are much. They were the best 3-point percentage team. You know, the Rockets are middle of the pack, but we all know this, that the Rockets are first in 3-pointers made, like actual 3-pointers made per game.
Yeah, that's why. It's just because they
defensively, the Rockets are not bad. That's the thing I'll say. The Rockets defensively are not bad. You know.
They're not bad. It's just they're going to go for that 140 to 139 matchup. And you know, so, yeah, by volume, yeah, you're not going to be the best 3-point shooter because you're shooting threes. By volume, you're not going to be the best defensive team because you want to get the ball back as quick as possible. So you're not going to play lockdown defense. Your thing is, okay, we'll give up the two. We'll just come back and hit a three on them.
I'll give you a couple of trivia questions here that are Spurs-Rockets. Well, one is Spurs-Rockets related. The other is not. When was the last time the Spurs and the Rockets played each other in the NBA playoffs?
I don't know.
The 1995 conference finals when Hakeem Olajuwon ate David Robinson's lunch after he won MVP. That was the last time the Spurs and the Rockets played each other in the playoffs. Can you believe that?
I was going to say that, but then I'm like, no, they're probably...
Yeah, there was some miscellaneous one in the middle that kind of popped up, but nope, that was the last time. I think we mentioned that, I believe, in a previous episode, because we talked about how all the Western Conference teams seem to have played each other, except for the Spurs and the Rockets. The other one is Mike D'Antoni has had a history coaching against the Spurs. Can you name the one time that he coached a team that wasn't the Phoenix Suns where he coached against the Spurs?
Where he coached against the Spurs?
Yes. You would not even think it at first.
Well, wouldn't it be the Nuggets?
No, it was the Lakers in 2013.
Because you said obscure. I'm like, okay, like he was the coach.
He filled in after Mike Brown was fired. Oh, by the way, interim head coach of the best team in the NBA, Mike Brown, when he was fired by the Lakers and D'Antoni took over the team. And he was the head coach when the Spurs swept them mercilessly because Kobe had torn his Achilles like 2 days before the season ended, if you remember that one. Yeah, I mean, I don't think any of that will play at all. It's just a good side storyline that D'Antoni had coached against the Spurs a bunch when he was with those Steve Nash, Amari Stoudemire, Phoenix Suns. I mean, is there any kind of memories you have of that?
No.
You have no memories of the Suns-Spurs series, or the time, or their rivalry.
Me and the Spurs. It's just the Spurs basketball every game. It's just no. Me and the Spurs are not have.
They're not compatible.
Never had a good remembering anything they've done ever.
Well, they're not a memorable team. I mean, I'm pretty sure the ratings show that too. I haven't glanced at the first round ratings. I think I'm pretty sure that Rockets Thunder, because all that Westbrook Harden stuff, got a very good rating. I did see that. I'm not sure about the Spurs. I know that the Spurs Grizzlies game was on ESPN primetime on Saturday, and they got a little bit lucky because that was probably the best. Was that probably the best playoff game you've seen among all of the games so far? Like just one game. The game four that went into overtime. It's the only overtime game. Yep. I mean, was there one that kind of interested you more, or like was fast? Maybe that game six between Milwaukee and Toronto with the big comeback by Milwaukee and then they ran out of gas.
It was kind of.
You ready to move on to the Golden State Warriors? Wait a minute. We got to do our prediction here.
This match, it'll be fun to watch. It'll be, because like we said, San Antonio only has one speed. Houston only has one speed. It'll be good to see who can make the other team bend to their way.
Well, the Thunder beat the Spurs, I don't want to say purely, but one of their biggest attributes that really gained the advantage over the Spurs was athleticism and just length. I mean, are the Rockets considered an athletic team, a long team, or like a versatile team? Are they that kind of Swiss Army knife type of NBA team, or is there or are they going to have to just do it purely with offense?
Purely with offense.
Okay, but they could do it, though. They have the capability. Now, the free throw percentage outside of Harden is kind of scary because, you know, Capella can't make free throws. Montrezl Harrell, if you go with him in the big lineup, he can't make free throws. So that might be something to watch. Let's go ahead and move on to the Golden State Warriors. They are going to be matching up against the winner, you know, as for this Sunday afternoon game. For the people that are not that are listening to this by the time it gets out, which hopefully you don't, you probably will be. It would be either the LA Clippers or the Utah Jazz. Which one do you want? First of all, do you want to have any comments on that Clippers Utah series since it'll be over by the time we go to the next episode?
Clippers just always get taken out by random injuries every year, and you're just, you know, again, it's, oh, well, I guess you can say Austin Rivers is a serviceable player.
He had a very good game six. Without, if he didn't play well in game six, they would have lost that game, you know?
You know, he's become a player, you know, is he worth what Doc paid him? No, not at all.
Probably not.
Yeah. He's not a terrible player like we all thought, you know, claim him to be when he came in, you know, even a couple of years ago. He has developed. Yeah, it's just Clippers, they're not going to be, it's not in the cards for them. Well, it's just they can't get, there's always somebody who goes down, always they can't get their full roster in order, and because they're built the way they are, they have literally no bench, and Mbah Mute, again, has to start all the time, and that's what you live and die with.
Yeah, and then there's Jamal Crawford, who can kill you every other game. It seems like every three or four games, Jamal Crawford has that one awesome game that really just, like, you know, if you're like the Utah Jazz in this case, just like totally screws you over. You're like, oh crap! Like, of course he had to have a good game when the Clippers needed him the most. You know, the Jazz are weird because they have that experience now because of Joe Johnson and who else am I missing that they added to
Boris
the mix?
Diaw.
Boris Diaw, who's like more of a locker room guy. He doesn't play often. George Hill. But it's sort of like a close but no cigar type of team where, like, they have young talent. You know, they had the Gobert injury, but Gobert came back and he seems to be playing pretty well. I know he did get an ankle injury in Game 6, which is kind of scary. So we'll see what happens there. But they're a team that they're very young. They're trying to learn how to win, and they have some veterans that show them how to win. But it seems like they're just barely, they're right at the hump, but they can't get over it. So I'm kind of curious as to seeing what happens in that Game 7 matchup. I'm pretty sure that I predicted that game. This was going to go seven games on the first
round
preview.
I think
we both
predicted Game 7.
It was just we knew it was going to be a close competitive series. We knew it, you know.
Yeah, and it turned out that way, and basically, you're taking the youthfulness, I'm taking the experience, and
yeah.
Has it been a good series? Not really.
It's one of those series where, you know, like, it's like the opposite of Spurs-Memphis, where people thought it was a great series because there was one great game. It was like, nah, the whole series as a whole was boring. This is one where the series as a whole, like, the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, where the games themselves have not been, like, individually have not been, like, incredibly thrilling, but the series as a story overall has been very competitive. Like, it's felt to me like nobody has had, like, a lead of, like, 12 points or greater. Like, it seems like every game is tight. Or every sequence in the series has been tight, which is really fun. Whenever you see teams like that have that sense of urgency, especially the Clippers that they lost Blake Griffin with a toe injury.
Yeah.
Like, you can't play on a turf toe or whatever.
They're just that team again. They're just snake bit.
I mean, I'm not trying to be like, you know, like, I've never played professional sports in my life, but like, you can't play on a bad toe.
No, it just hurts.
I know of course it hurts, but like you lose your vertical. Like, you, I know you, I understand it, that effectiveness is lost, but
it hurts to just do simple things. Mm-hmm. You don't have your cutting speed. You don't have your jumping speed. You don't have, you know, you don't have.
You're sitting here making just excuses for Blake Griffin. I can't believe it.
I'm not making excuses for him. I'm just saying, I don't think at this stage of the game people are holding themselves out for no reason.
Oh, I believe that. Like, look at Gobert. Like, that knee injury, the knee wrench, the bumping of the knees in the regular season, he's out for a month. He's out for a month.
Oh, yeah.
Look at Rajon Rondo. Rajon Rondo is desperately trying to get on the court with a broken thumb. It's like, dude, you can't play with a broken thumb. You know, you can't.
You can't play the broken thumb because you couldn't shoot to begin with. All they're going to do is just foul you the entire game.
It's not like football where you can, like, if you're a cornerback and you can play with a cast and bat the ball down with your broken hand. Like, that's not how it works. Like, you need your fingers to dribble the ball. You know, it was just shitty timing for Chicago going all. I mean, I'm done talking about Chicago. We got to put a moratorium on that. So let's talk about here with the Clippers first. If they match up against the Golden State Warriors, if you just look at that on paper, you would say, oh, it's over, because the Clippers get owned by the Warriors. They've only beaten them once in the last three seasons at all, and that was one time, and the Warriors have won, like, I think the other 11 times that they've played. So, like, what do you see here?
Without Blake Griffin, it's just four games, Golden State easily.
But what if they did have Blake Griffin? Five games?
It's one of those on paper, they should have the toughness to take Golden State out, who said the beginning of the year. This was supposed to be their year because this was the end of their window.
But here's the funny thing, too. They talk so much about the potential of Clippers-Warriors because we've almost had it two times in the playoffs. Now, they did play in 2014, but that was the Mark Jackson Warriors. That doesn't count, right? We can't factor in anything from that series, correct?
How did they really? They haven't changed since.
Well, I mean, it's a different style. I mean, we're not playing Jermaine O'Neal for 30 minutes like Mark Jackson was in Golden State. The Clippers are kind of the same, you know. I mean, a little bit different because, you know, Blake is out, and, you know, Chris Paul's a little bit older, even though he's had incredible games against the Utah Jazz in that series. I mean, I don't know what his stat line, but it's something hovering around like 25 points and 7 rebounds and 9 assists. Like, he is just killing it. But in terms of the Warriors, like, you would think that they played like year after year because we talk about it all the time, but they haven't, because the Clippers have kind of had that stumble in the round before that where it seemed like they were going to play the Warriors, but it didn't happen. Like, they lost to the Rockets because they choked a 3-1 series lead. They were the original 3-1 chokers, by the way. Well, that's not fair to say, because there were other teams that choked 3-1 series lead before them, but they were kind of like one of the more well-known ones because of that Game 6 against the Rockets. And then the other one was Portland, and then Chris Paul and Blake Griffin both got hurt in the same game. And then the Clippers went down to the Blazers, and the Blazers lost to the Warriors. So they haven't played each other, but we talk about it all the time, is really what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it's just, you know, that's why we don't play these games on paper. this season, it's just Golden State would just, they don't, if you lose one of the pieces from your front court and you have nobody to back them up, there's... You know, it's just Zaza Pachulia is just going to eat anybody alive because, oh, we'll put Draymond on Jordan, and then we'll let whoever else. We could even go small. And
yeah,
just
Draymond on DeAndre Jordan makes a lot of sense. And besides, Draymond Green is like perpetually in foul trouble. That's just how he plays. He never cares about foul trouble. So who better to foul in a cheap foul situation than DeAndre Jordan, because he's not going to kill you at the free throw line.
Yeah, so let's just go small. Let's put a McCaw in and have Durant on Mbah Mute. Ooh, that's... Forget it.
The one thing I'll say for Chris Paul is that I think he has the best defensive mentality when he goes one-on-one with Curry. I think Cleveland has the best, like, coaching mentality, which is to, like, just... if you want to call LeBron the coach, the guy who, like, leads the team into with their game plan of, like, touching up Curry off of ball screens. But it seems like Paul is more than willing to get physical with Curry and really rough him up. Like, it's like a guy who had gotten into the league before Michael Jordan. So there was a long time there where you play a guy really physical, like a superstar, because you're like convinced that you're like better than him, even though the superstar player is obviously better than you. But you'd like, you kind of put yourself in that mentality of like, no, I'm better than him. I'm the experienced guy. I'm the leader. Curry's just a flimsy guard. So it seems like Paul kind of takes exception whenever he plays against Curry. So what do you see there with that matchup if it happens?
Curry will still do his thing, and then if he's having an off day, I'll just pass it to Thompson or pass it to Durant.
Yeah, well, that's the biggest.
That's deal. The difference.
Who guards Durant?
You know, with other teams, it's just, oh, well, you have to go 1-1 here. Okay, you have a bad game. Well, there's so many other people. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know who guards Durant. Mbah Mute, like, you go small and you have, like, JJ Redick on him. Like, I don't know what you can do. Like, that's Paul Pierce. Like, I don't know what you can do there with Durant. Now, Durant just came back from in game four from the calf strain, but that was a very whatever injury. It wasn't like a serious deal. It wasn't like when Curry wrenched his knee against the Rockets last year. It's like the calf thing was nothing. Like, they literally sat him because they knew they were going to sweep Portland anyway. So it's not like health is going to be a concern for Durant. He's not going to be playing at half speed. I just have a lot of trouble with the Clippers in any matchup. Like, they're good offensively. They make a lot of threes. Paul is still a maestro as a point guard. And their experience, like I said, I just don't know how they can match up with the Warriors. The Warriors just haven't beat every which way but lose.
Mm-hmm. So then how will Utah fare any better?
Utah, because they can play defense. Now, the problem with Utah is that their offense is so bad. We've seen that in the series where they have trouble. I mean, we're in a league now where if you don't crack 100 points in a game, something is wrong with you. That means you're playing like only four people on the court. So, like, for them to not be able to crack 100 points in like some of these playoff games has been kind of scary. Just shows that they haven't been able to compose themselves altogether. Gordon Hayward. And also, they've had bad injury luck, too. Like, they finally get Gobert back, and then Gordon Hayward gets food poisoning. You know, they finally get both of them back, and Derek Favors isn't playing well. You know, it's just one of those things where it seems like they're never at full health.
Yeah, and really, the young guys haven't done much at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
they've gotten a little bit of good play out of Neto. But only by necessity, because they had to, they needed a backup point guard because Exum wasn't really doing much for him.
And George Hill has been good, but just Hayward hasn't taken over as we expected him to. And
Rodney Hood, like, has disappeared at times.
Yeah. Hood has disappeared. Favors has disappeared. You know, all these, oh, it's all this youthful energy, and you're just, well, we need to rely on Joe Johnson, and Joe Johnson's like, I could totally do it, and.
Yeah.
Even in the victories, you know, Derek Favors.
Yeah, they had to rely on Joe Ingles, right? In one of those games, I think it was game four, where they needed like 11 assists out of Joe Ingles just to move the ball around when Hayward was out, because like George Hill just wasn't getting it done.
Yeah, and then he comes back, you know, in game five, he was, you know, 0 points in 30 minutes. And
yeah.
Favors plays for like 15 minutes, and it's just, well, Joe Johnson, go at it. And
yeah, ISO Joe.
Yeah, and it's the same thing we saw with Milwaukee as well. If you're reduced to relying on one guy, you know, Hayward and Favors should have the talent to do something. And just, well, you know, Hayward was there. He was scoring his points, but I didn't think he was as dominant as he could have been.
Yeah, he had the 40-point game in the loss, I believe. But he has – and he has had okay lines, like 27 points here. And
yeah, and 27 points, and it was efficient, but it was just like, all right, you could be silently good, but – if the story
are
is
you
Rodney
impacting
Hood.
The game, are you the difference between the win and the loss, you know?
Yeah, or do you just score 30 points like you're always gonna?
Quick aside, is Joe Johnson a Hall of Famer?
Yes.
Wow, really?
When you look at his numbers,
I'm not saying that he's like a poo-poo player. I'm just saying that I'm surprised that you it was like a no-brainer for you.
Well, we're running out of people who are borderline. There's only a few, like, well, how is he not? And, you know, with Chris Webber pretty much, but
yeah.
Joe Johnson is top, you know, he has put up a lot of points in his career.
Yeah, I love how he started as a defensive shooting guard in Boston. Then he eventually turned into, like the ISO small forward in Atlanta, and then in Brooklyn, and now he's a four. He's a power forward now. I mean, is that fair to say that he kind of plays the four spot now?
He is, sort of.
I mean, you see him match up a lot with Mbah Mute, who's a small forward. So, you know, but he's kind of got that big body, strong, he chicken wings when he goes for his shot. You know, it's hard to guard. But, you know, for them matching up wise, you know, Gobert gives them a lot of problems because he's such a sure rebounder. And I know that Draymond Green takes a lot of pride defensively, but that's one guy that he cannot outjump because Rudy Gobert is just straight up bigger than him. I know DeAndre Jordan's the same way for the Clippers, but Gobert is better offensively than Draymond, so he might be able to get some work done there. Gordon Hayward can match up with Durant and not get absolutely killed. I worry about the guard position there with Curry and Sean Livingston and company. That would be a real problem for Utah.
Yeah.
You know, and then there's the three-point shooting alone, because even though Utah they do make more threes than you would expect, they play such a slow pace. Transition will do nothing for them because they don't run transition. So getting turnovers, which they do get a lot of, you know, in the blocks department because of Gobert, they're not going to move the ball really fast on them. They're not going to turn around and like go dunk the ball. That's why I was shocked when Gordon Hayward I'm not shocked, because when Gordon Hayward got that dunk, that was because it was at the end of the game clock. there's just no transition game at all for Utah. They want to play super slow. That's the way Quinn Snyder likes it. That's the way they prefer it. And Golden State, you know, they're kind of one of those teams where they can play slow if they want to and still probably win the game.
Just quick numbers on Joe Johnson.
Okay, we're back on the Joe Johnson train.
20,000 career points.
Uh-huh.
That's sort of, I think, the benchmark of where you have to be.
Yeah. There's probably a couple of people like around there that might not be there, like Clifford Robinson or somebody like that.
He's 46th all time with 20,033 points. Mm-hmm. Ninth in 3-point field goals.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I think as the, you know,
he's also top 10 all time in clutch ass shots.
You know, as the Hall of Fame goes down, they start taking some of these, you know, they have to start sliding the scale because, you know, how many Hall of Fame players are in the NBA now? Well, not that many. And you have to put people in every year. And as we see with baseball, you know, the first year, well, he's not that good. He got 30% of the vote. And all of a sudden, well, yeah, after 10 years, well, okay, now he's 70%. So right now, yeah, he's borderline, but I think as time goes on.
Well, the thing that makes Joe Johnson so interesting for this Jazz team is that it's such a reliable weapon. Like, it's something that works no matter who you play. You can play a big team like the Clippers have, at least they had at the time with Griffin and Jordan. You can play a smaller team that likes to run small lineups like Golden State. And Joe Johnson is equally effective because he's an isolation player. If you're able to like run a decent set or run a decent screen or a switch where the other defender can't come over to help out Johnson in time, he has the ability to just create separation and just knock down a really, really tough shot. It's a very reliable thing. That's what won the Cavaliers a championship. Kyrie Irving and LeBron James were able to make shots with a hand in their face. So,
all right. So Golden State in how many games?
I would say 6. I think that Utah could give them some actual trouble. You know, I feel you would say 5 still. Like you got the idea that maybe Golden State will have that one of those like offensive blitzes and Utah can't score at home and that'll be it and they'll finish them off in Golden State in game 5.
Yep.
That's pretty much your prediction there. I would say the Jazz in 6 because I just feel like they would be a tougher matchup than the Clippers, and I had the Clippers in like 5, maybe 4. Like I think the Warriors would probably sweep the Clippers, but one way or another we have the Golden State Warriors winning that one.
Yeah, that's why it's just like who cares who they play? It's not going to be it wouldn't be a, well, you know, if Atlanta played Boston or Washington plays Boston, it's just, no, Golden State's going to easily win whomever.
You had Houston. I don't know if I really made a firm prediction there because I was kind of going up and, kind of trying to figure it out myself. I'd still probably say the Spurs because their defense is more reliable than Houston's. So, like, the only upset I think that we both agreed on was Washington. And I actually have some trouble picking Washington.
Well, at least we pick the same team straight through, so at least finally we have some difference.
Some dissidence. Like, well, here's the truth, though, Adam. Like, when you get to this point, it's hard to disagree. Like, it's hard to say, oh, I don't think this team's going to win, and you're like, oh, yeah, I think this team's going to win. Like, it gets pretty clear cut when you get to when you're in the first round and then the conference final, conference semis. Conference finals is different. Like, it really, really depends on, like, star players, how well you're playing, matchups, like, a lot of stuff factors in where you can easily see an upset go down. Like, if you look on paper, the Hawks and the Cavs in 2015 was an upset because the Cavs were a 2 seed and the Hawks were a 1 seed. But if you watch the game, you're like, oh, God, the Cavs were so much better than the Hawks. You know, so
yeah.
It's kind of interesting, like, because you see how you talked about how Boston is one of the worst 1 seeds we've ever seen. But like, it kind of makes it interesting because it means the Washington Wizards, who are a 4 seed, might actually be better than the Boston Celtics. We don't know yet. You know, it's kind of fun to watch that one because it's more of a christening. Like, we're going to really see the start of something really, really testy between those two teams. Like, we didn't know if it was going to be Washington-Toronto, Boston-Toronto, Boston-Washington. We didn't really know which teams were going to come out and wind up playing against each other in the second round, because we knew that Cleveland was going to play one of them in the second round. So it turned out to be Washington and Boston, and Toronto got the Cleveland matchup. Unless you think Toronto just comes out, you know, guns a-blazing because they want to stick it to LeBron.
Well, they have no choice but to. This has to be their year with Lowry opting out and Ibaka as a free agent. If you lose one of
them, Patrick
Patterson,
a free agent, so you might lose your bench guy, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah, you got tough choices to make, you know. And even Washington, I mean, you might lose Otto Porter in restricted free agency if you don't want to match the offer sheet. I think they will eventually. I just think they made a terrible negotiation decision not to extend them in the end of October. They should have just given them the deal that was on the table instead of giving him a lowball deal, and now you have to pay him more because he's going to get matched. You have to match an offer sheet that's, like, extremely high. You know what I'm saying? We're getting off track, but, like, basically, Washington's in a situation where this might be now or never.
No, Washington still, because you have Kelly Oubre, who's, you know, right behind him, and you could sign Bogdanovich nice and cheap.
Yeah.
So, you know, you do have backup plans for Porter not signing it.
And Boston's just weird because you got all the draft picks, you've got the cap flexibility. Like, this team, what I'm trying to say about Boston is this team might be completely different in 2 years, but they might be even better. You know what I'm saying?
Well, Boston, we'll get to that when the time comes, but their window is also closing. A lot of these windows are closing. The same thing
we can say windows.
We can say that with Golden State. Once you re-sign Durant, you're going to have no money literally for anybody else.
Yeah, I mean, well, did you hear that one where there might be like a wink-wink nudge-nudge that Andre Iguodala will take less to stay? You heard that one?
Yeah, and he can, but what's going to happen when, you know, you can't sign Livingston, so all you have are undrafted free agents, and somebody gets injured? You know, you've seen what happened to the Clippers. It's just you're relying on the health of all these players, but, you know, we're so far off track.
Well,
we have...
Yeah, well, we got a long ways to go, but the Clippers, though, like, it's not now or never. It's like, it's now. You got to do it now, you know?
If you don't do it this year, it's kind of over.
No, like, today. They have to win today. You know what I'm saying? I mean, we're doing this, like we said, on the day of Game 7. So all this might be a moot point. They might be in the postmortem on our playlist, off-season reviews for the next episode. Well, not the next episode, because we're going to do the East teams that didn't make the playoffs next week for the listeners. But we will be talking about the West teams that were in the postseason eventually, along with the East teams. But, I mean, have you changed your mind about any of the playoffs matchups?
No.
Nothing that really kind of, like, made you think. Like, I mean, the one thing that made me, like, really change my mind about something is that Giannis Antetokounmpo is, like, one of the 10 best players in the NBA.
I tried telling the beginning of the year, but Jokic is the most improved.
Okay,
how can
I'm
Giannis
talking
be?
About the most improved player award. I'm talking about just the best player.
How can he be? He's not that. Well, he did a good year, I guess.
Well, now that we have the award show in June, we actually, it's like, it's sort of like a presidential campaign. I could actually go to Spin Alley and, you know, try to spin this as long as I possibly can to the point where I can have at least half of the congregation convinced that Jokic is better than Giannis Antetokounmpo. You know, there's no more snap judgments anymore. When do the votes actually go in? Like, do they just, like, sit on the votes for, like...
They just sit on the votes. I think the votes are already in.
Well, Adam, they're going to leak. I mean, or maybe the writers will show, like, some people will unofficially figure out. It's not like SAG with the Oscars where there's like 25 million people voting. Like, there's only so many votes, so people are going to eventually figure it out.
Yeah, but I don't know who really cares that much to figure.
What did you watch more, the NFL draft, which is still a ratings phenomenon despite the ESPN like firing half of their staff, or the NBA playoffs? Which one did you watch more of? Be honest.
Neither.
I like the draft because I love college football, and I like to see where those players go. I hate the NFL.
I watched part of the draft on NFL Network, and I never watched the NFL Network.
Oh, like Rich Eisen, Mike Mayock?
No, I couldn't stand it.
That's the NFL Network, Rich Eisen and Mike Mayock.
Yeah, I can't stand the NFL Network coverage, but it was just like, I'm not going to, you know, ESPN with their thing. Like, you know what, let's just not watch ESPN. But no, this year I sort of just...
What did you think of the gutting? Like, what did you think of Chad Ford being out? Who was the other one? Henry Abbott from Cats. True Hoop was a great blog. I mean, that was one of, like, the only truly independent things that ESPN had in, like, the late 2000s when they were, like, expanding their digital stuff, their digital content. Chad Ford being let go after the draft stunned me. I couldn't believe it.
Well, it's they gain nothing from – they're not – the salaries they get from firing all these people are not going to pay for really anything.
Well, that's the thing. It's like the Trump budget cuts. Like, well, we're going to cut out some of these small programs. But if you look at the pie chart, like, the percentage of how much they were contributing to the budget is, like, nothing. So it's like you're not lessening the budget by cutting these programs because it was literally a dip in the bucket. You know, like that's how I feel. It's like they're cutting off their nose to spite their face. Like they're continuing to pay big personalities like Stephen A. Smith and Max Kellerman and Dick Vitale, but into the millions. But you're willing to let go like good writers like Ethan Strauss and Dana O'Neill and guys like people like that.
That's what people are arguing about, is why are you letting him go and why are you keeping Stephen A. Smith and all those people? Because, well, that's what the network has become. People just want to see background noise where they yell at each other for 10 hours in the morning.
Soundbite TV. That's what you need. And also, you know, I was talking to JT Rizzero about this, and he's right. Like, that, it's so hard to continue to get the eyeballs. Like, the big fight now is not not the content. Because the content's everywhere. It's keeping the people tuned in. That's the hard part now, because there's so many different options and so many different places where you can get good content.
Yeah, and, you know,
like here, like right here on PlaceToBeNation.com.
You know, you could get, you know, it's, oh, well, they fired the Big Ten blogger. You know, like, well, you could get that really from anywhere. And if you're a Wisconsin fan, you could care less what Iowa State is doing. But it's the same, yeah, you're marketing, well, we need to market towards the kids who want to watch us now, because people are just tuning in to watch the games and nothing else.
Yeah.
If that.
Well, the big rumor on the NBA side is that, because I also forgot to mention that they let go of Mark Stein, which was stunning too, but the rumor is that they're actually clearing the way for Adrian Wojnarowski, because they might bring in over the vertical. That's the
yeah, and then that's, you know, that's going to be even more rabble of, you know, well, you know, he's well, but why are you gutting your roster, and then you're just going to pay somebody millions of dollars again? The other guys couldn't have done it, but the thing with ESPN is this is what you get for paying
all these rights fees,
Yeah, no. Well, we have the e-gaming championships. We paid millions of dollars for World Cricket Championships. We paid for the rights for
College Baseball, you know, World Series, which nobody watches. I look, all due respect to those college schools that have good baseball teams. Nobody is watching your games. Nobody's watching.
And you're competing against yourself.
You have no NCAA tournament to fill out your March ratings.
You have the women's tournament.
You don't even get the Saturday and Sunday of the Masters. I mean, how much did they have to pay to get Wimbledon? Like, they had to pay out of the
you pay out of the nose for Wimbledon. We have all these Pac-12 games. Well, that's great to see UCLA and Utah, but if you're putting up that against your SEC network games,
now, about the SEC network. That thing's a gem.
And you're also putting that against your ACC network, which you paid for all the rights.
Yeah, that's
not. They paid out for two. Yeah. And, you know, here, well, we bought the rights to every bowl game. Well, nobody wants to see the Idaho Bowl. Period.
Exactly. You had these add-ons for these bowl officials, like, oh well, if you're going to take the playoff, you better take this game and this game and this game because they're affiliated with us. It's like, you know, so you're adding on to your bill. The other part is like, and this was, I think Colin Cowherd said this in an interview. And he's absolutely right, even though I don't always agree with Colin Cowherd, that Fox has an NFL contract that's fantastic. They get two Super Bowls, they get the NFC Championship game, they get the Sunday window every game, and they pay less in the term of billions to the NFL that ESPN pays, and all ESPN gets is a Monday Night Football game and a wild card game. Like, that is not returns on your investment. But they feel like they had to do it. you know?
Well, because they want to be part of the conversation, that's why. Mm-hmm. And then the same thing, you know, well, they lost out all the hockey rights. Well, hockey's dead to us.
Yeah.
And then, well, okay, now people know that. And you can see, well, okay, again, if you're just, you know, you've gone your way of having Jamel Hill
and Michael Smith. Yeah, they've gotten eaten up on Twitter for being on the 6 o'clock Sports Center and staying in the loop, you know?
And that's the problem is nobody wants to sit for an hour to wait to see the game, highlights of a game they can literally go on their Twitter feed and see in 30 seconds.
To finish this up as a basketball conversation, does this affect any, like, inkling of, like, when you watch the NBA finals? Like, are you going to be like, well, I'm just not going to watch the ESPN because their coverage is shit? But it's not like Mark Stein and Ethan Strauss, it's not like they were contributors to their daily
routine. No, it has nothing to do with anything. Yeah. It's, you know, I go to ESPN.com because I don't feel like searching around through 10 other sites.
And for the record, I really like Mike Breen. Like, I think he's a very good personality. So, like, people are like, well, Mike Breen is still calling games. Well, Mike Breen's a really good announcer. Like, I have no problem with that. It's the stuff behind it that is
there'll be new people. There's always a hungry 25-year-old who's going to take over and be like, oh, he came out to be pretty good. And, you know, remember, Adam Schefter was just Woody Page's little understudy guy at the Denver Post for Around the Horn.
Well, you know where he made his money is that he was the scooper. He was like the original Twitter breaking news guy. And ESPN got so sick of it that they're like, okay, if you can't beat him, join him. Let's give him all the money to come to us so that we can get all the scoops that Adam Schefter provides. That's kind of like what Woj does. Woj gets all the breaks in the NBA free agency and the trades before anyone does. So they decided, you know what? I mean, I hate to say this about Mark Stein, but like, you're competing for news. Like, you're competing to get a source, you know? So if Woj is getting all of the news before Mark Stein breaks it, well, of course you're going to want the other guy, you know?
Yeah.
It's just the way it is. But
all right, conference semifinals.
All right. On behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reich. Take care, everybody. We're going to see you again next week.